Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, depending on where you are around the world here on ACB Radio Mainstream, and welcome to Main Menu Live. Tonight, we bring Michael Kern on, along with Rick Harmon and my co-host Daryl Shandro, to talk all about the non-visual desktop access screen reader. So before we get started in all of that, let's bring in Daryl Shandro, my co-host here tonight. Hello, Daryl, how's it going?
Going great. I'm running the screen reader as we speak and have been running it throughout today, actually.
Oh, that's great.
Getting used to it, and it's pretty neat, pretty exciting stuff.
Well, that's great, and we'll be taking calls here in just a minute. And I wanted to cover a couple of topics here before we actually already have a caller, and we're going to ask the caller to hold on while we discuss some introductory things here tonight for Main Menu Live. And the first thing I want to mention is that we'd have a MSN Messenger account, which you can add to your MSN Messenger. You want to give that information out, Daryl?
Certainly, and I'm already monitoring that. That is mainmenu@acbradio.org.
All right.
Mainmenu@acbradio.org.
That's great. And I wanted to cover a couple of very interesting technology news items before we get into our major story for tonight. And the first one that I wanted to cover was about iTunes version 7.1. And there's a couple of things on that front. And one kind of late-breaking news, too. Now, Daryl, I know you and I spoke last evening, and you knew that I had talked with Darcy from the Darcy and Holly Screen Switchers podcast, remember?
Right, and we understand that iTunes 7.1 is accessible on the Mac with Mac OS 10.4.8 on Tiger with VoiceOver.
Yes, and that includes purchasing items from the store on iTunes
woo,
as well.
Woo, woo.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting stuff. And we heard from one of the mailing lists tonight on GUI Talk that someone is pretty successfully using, well, we'd like to find out more about this, but pretty successfully using WindowEyes with iTunes 7.1 for Windows. So we're going to try to get a hold of that individual and find out more information. But that's very, very interesting. And the other item that I wanted to mention tonight was that I want to make sure our caller can hear us here. The other item that I wanted to mention here tonight was that WindowEyes 6.1 Public Beta 2 is now available, as well as the Freedom Scientific JAWS for Windows 8.0 public beta for Vista is also available. So for those of you either using JAWS for Windows or WindowEyes, then you want to head on over to their respective websites and download those. Lots of stuff going on in the Vista front these days, for sure. All right, before we actually all that kind of stuff, what I'd like to do tonight is to go ahead and feature our Access Watch segment from Jamie Pauls, and then we'll get right into our topic for tonight, and we'll take our caller first. That way they can get their question asked. And we already have a number of questions from people who have written in to us as well, and we'll get to all of that tonight as well. So stay tuned, folks. Mike and Rick, just hang in there just for a second, and we'll be right back with you as well. Here's Jamie Pauls from Access Watch.
Hi, Main Menu listeners. This is Jamie Pauls with another Access Watch software review. What would you say if I told you I had just won $250,000? Well, you might want to congratulate me, or you might want a loan. What if I told you that I won it playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You might want to know when the episode's going to air. Well, before you get too excited, let me make myself a little more clear. I'm referring to the game Freedom Millionaire, which is actually an accessible version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You can find the game at www.themillionweb.net. It's free and comes with four sets of trivia questions. There are also some very realistic sounds that come right from the television show. So go download the game and check out some other things that are on the website as well. And be sure to come visit us at www.accesswatch.info. My contact information is Jamie Pauls, JamiePauls, at gmail.com. Have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Without further ado, let's warmly welcome Rick Harmon and Mike Kern. Mike, you're actually in Australia, aren't you?
I am, that's right. I'm
in Victoria, what time is Australia. It there? It's the next day, isn't it?
Yes, it's about probably 1:15 on Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, well, at least we're not talking to you at 3 in the morning like we did last week with England. that was rather fun. Well, listen, we have a caller on the phone. I hope they're still here. Okay. Let's bring the caller in here. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
I am still here. I have two comments and two questions, and I will be quick.
Okay, go right ahead.
My comment is, a long time ago I used the American version of Virgo, which was Screen Power for Windows, which was quite ill-fated. However, it made me really understand the object navigation, and I've been using NVDA now for about an hour. And one of the things that's very cool about the object navigation is it actually works better than any screen reader I've ever used with the ADMS software for downloading to Yaesu ham radio. So if you use ham radio and have any Yaesu rigs and are using ADMS software, you should definitely be trying out NVDA. That's my comment. My two questions are, one, can I run NVDA from a USB flash drive? And that would certainly beat Narrator for accessing random computers at work. And my second question is, which Sappy 5 voice is the most responsive? And I'm happy to take my answers on the air.
Okay, great. That would be great. Okay, so her first question was, can it be run from a USB device? And the second one is, what Sappy synthesizers are most responsive with the synthesizer? So, Mike, you want to take that first?
Yeah, all right. Well, yes, NVDA definitely can be run off a USB thumb drive or USB key, how we call it in Australia, I think. And it can also be run now off a CD, if you burn it to a CD as well. I've just in the last few days, revision 400 work off CDs as well.
Okay, now, what version was that, Mike? You're kind of breaking up here on the Skype side. For what?
25.
425.
425.
Okay. Got it, okay.
Okay. To run NVDA off a USB key, you pretty much just need to copy it onto the USB thumb drive, and it will pretty much just run straight away if you just run NVDA.exe or whatever. You can make it auto-run off the USB key if your USB thumb drive does support this. Now, quite a lot don't. But I'm told that there are a few that do, so you'll need to put a special file in there called autorun.inf, and you'll need to put a few lines of code. I'm sure you can probably find out on the internet anywhere about autorun.inf files and how to write those, but that's only if you want to auto-start it when you stick your USB stick in.
Okay, good. All right, great. Well, let's talk to Rick here for just a minute. Now, Rick, you've done, and we'll give you, we'll give everyone out there the information about where they can locate that. But Rick, you did a very extensive podcast all about NVDA, and would like to find out what kind of topics did you cover on that?
Yes, I covered Outlook Express, Internet Explorer, Windows Media Player, Winamp.
Wow, and so pretty much
that's
the
about it, I believe.
Yeah, so pretty much the gauntlet there. Quite a bit of stuff there.
Word and Excel as well.
Oh, Word and Excel, okay. And what, how did you find each of those? I mean, you know, briefly, obviously, we, you know, only have about 45 minutes left of the show. So, but so how did you find those? And then Daryl will ask you your impressions too.
I thought the program works very well. I'm running the latest build now, and I've noticed it's running even better. Everything works really good.
Well, that's great. And does it support, now, Mike, does it support the WinApp library as well?
I tested it with WinApp. What my major goal is with NVDA is to make sure it works with Windows in general, so making sure that it just works with all the different types of controls and Windows around.
Gotcha.
There is specific support for certain things, such as Internet Explorer and Microsoft Word, and where it's very necessary. But there's no specific support at all for WinApp. If it works, that's great. But I haven't actually looked into it yet.
Okay. And Daryl, what about you? Now you've been playing with it most of today. How have you found it so far?
Okay. Well, I was able to use it. It works quite well in Outlook Express, as Rick mentioned. It's reasonably. It's pretty usable for email in Outlook. 2003, and otherwise, I have a weekly planner that I use and a form tracker spreadsheet that I use in Excel 2003, and that unfortunately didn't go so well. And the knowledge portal that we have is a web-based application, and that there were some concerns there as well. So I had to switch back over to JAWS, but I did use it. Off and on throughout the day, and had thought about installing this a couple of weeks ago, and now I'm excited about it. It's pretty great product, certainly a great piece of software if you needed to gain very quick access to an unknown machine, and I think it would be just excellent for that purpose, definitely.
Absolutely, and really, it's a pretty young product. And for what, how young it really is? How young is the product, Mike?
I started it in April last year, but wasn't really working on it all that much. Probably from about November onwards, I've been really working on it very hard, pretty much full time.
Wow. So really, a period of about four months of consolidated, or even 3 months of consolidated effort that you've been. Kind of really focused on it. Mm-hmm. Now, Daryl, you had some questions about NVDA.
Right. We have a question. We have a question from Pat. She asks that's distracting. Okay. She asks. I'm sorry, we'll have to do Paul's question first because I can't find it. Okay, Paul asks if NVDA can be used with AT&T natural speaking voices.
Can it be, can it be used with those, Mike?
Yes, it definitely can. As long as they're SAPI 5, they will work quite well. They'll be, of course, because they're natural voices, they will be a slightly less responsive, but in general they work just as good as any other SAPI 5 voice.
Now, some of the AT&T voices, though, are SAPI 4, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So those will not work, right?
That's right. We're currently working on a SAPI 4 driver at the moment, but we're having a few troubles, but we are working on it. So perhaps in a few months we might have a working SAPI 4 driver, and then you'll be able to use all those as well.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But most people can, you know, have SAPI 5 voices, you know, at their disposal, and it really shouldn't be that big of a deal for them to, you know, pick those voices up and run with it.
Yeah, and can I just mention that there's a very good free and open source SAPI 5 synthesizer called eSpeak.
Oh, really?
A guy named Jonathan Duddington is working on. It's been used for quite a while now under Linux, and now with NVDA, people are starting to use it in Windows, and it's very, very responsive. It doesn't sound all that human-sounding. It's a little bit like maybe the RTEC or the Orpheus speech, but really, it's very good clarity and definitely very responsive.
Wow, I would love it if someone could mimic the sound of the Arctic 215 chip. Remember that one?
Now,
how far back do you go?
Mike, is there a certain because I've installed eSpeak 1.21 over here today, and it honestly it doesn't sound very good. Is there something I need to be doing other than the out of the box implementation,
or
anyone else who would be? Because I couldn't recommend it right now. I'm using the NearSpeech Paul that came with K1000. That's a pretty good voice to use with NVDA, by the way, everyone.
Yep. No, eSpeak, I guess, isn't for everyone, but I've certainly gotten used to it over a few months. I mean, I guess you do need to make, some sacrifices if you want something that's absolutely free and open source as well. But I can certainly understand it perfectly now after using it for a while and at a pretty fast speed. And I just like the responsiveness, really. That's what I like. And it gets my job done at least.
Well, from a developer standpoint, that's really important. I mean, when you're zipping around in a code editor, you want performance and you want, quick response time. What speech are you using with NVDA, Rick?
Currently, I'm using either the NeoSpeech voices or the RealSpeak voices, but I have tried it with a little bit of everything. I've used Sam and Mary and, the Microsoft voices, and everything works pretty good. I've got good response here from it.
Well,
it really works well with it's a little more responsive with the RealSpeak voices. I've been using it with the Karen voice a little bit today.
The number is 866-400-5333, 866-400. Jeff, if you'd like to call in and ask any questions tonight of our guests. Now, Mike, what really got you started in writing a screen reader? I mean, you kind of mentioned this a little bit during your the first hour here on Main Menu, but what really motivated you to? I mean, that's a tough job, writing a screen reader. What really motivated you in?
Well, look, I've been using computers for many years. I was born with a vision impairment, and then in around 1998, I lost what sight I did have. So that was the first time I'd really used screen readers, but. I've always had an interest, in information technology and programming. I've worked on quite a few different projects, such as the Adobe Audition JAWS scripts, which were previously the CoolEdit Pro JAWS scripts, and some other things for Linux. So I've always enjoyed programming, and from actually using Linux, I've always, realized that there are free screen readers out there, and it can be done. So, why isn't it being done for Windows?
Sure.
And I was... In 2005, I was in the middle of a Bachelor of Computer Science, but I was having a bit of trouble with it, not with the content, but more with getting things in accessible formats, etc. So I needed a bit of a break, and I thought, well, why don't I try my hand at something? I mean, I'm not the absolute best programmer in the world, but then on the other hand, no one's really doing it. People say to me all the time, you could do this or that with a screen reader, but no one seems to be really, actually going and doing it. So I thought, well, I've got the time at the moment, I might just try.
That's great. We have a question from Mike Calvo from Saratech Corporation, actually. He IM'd me and wants to know, I guess he wasn't listening during the first hour. Could you briefly review whether your product has review keys, similar to, the JAWS cursor or the WindowEyes cursor? Does your product have that? Now, I already know the answer to this, but we'll go ahead and let you, give the answer again. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Well, look, it doesn't actually have commands to review the entire screen, and this is because we currently don't have video intercept driver or display hooks, so we're not making an off-screen model at the moment. What we are doing is using object navigation, which is rather like what was found in Virgo 4, which was a Windows screen reader, and other Linux screen readers, where you can navigate a hierarchical tree of objects in your operating system. So every control, every window is an object. That's the way we're doing it at the moment. And you can also look at the text in the current object. So it's really about moving around, finding the object you want, and then you can use sort of just the number pad by itself and review the actual text in that object. But at this point in time, no screen review, though we are looking into this. It is a very hard task to write display hooks or a video intercept, one of the most likely be display hooks. I don't really have the capabilities at the moment, but we're certainly looking into this, and we'll see what we come up with.
Okay, great. We actually have a caller, and we'll go ahead and bring the caller in and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, all. This is Don Barrett.
Hello, Don.
How you doing?
We're doing great, man.
Good. A quick question for you, Mike. First of all, I want to congratulate you, and you've done a superb job. And you're making it available free, and that's just wonderful. So keep up the great work. My question is, if you install it using a USB drive, what sappy voice will it use? Can you tell it to use the one, maybe installing one on the USB drive, or will it use the default speech setting for that particular computer, assuming that it's a sappy 5 voice? And I'll hang up and listen to my answer on the air.
Okay, thank you, Don.
Mm-hmm. All right. By default, it will use just the default one on your system, so most likely that would be something like Microsoft SAM or something like that. MBDA does have a configuration file which can be stored on the USB drive as well, so you know, if you're always just using your computer with that USB drive, well, you can probably make it work with another Sappy 5 voice. However, it starts getting a bit difficult when you take the USB drive to someone else's computer and you put it in. The Sappy 5 voices may not be in the same order because MBDA currently uses the number of the Sappy 5 voice rather than the full entire name. So you may not actually get the voice you want. However, though, it's pretty easy to configure it to make it work with the voice if the voice is on that system. Also, in regards to having a voice on the USB key, we can't currently sort of ship around Sappy voices on a USB key because they do need to be installed. I am looking into making an eSpeak DLL library so that eSpeak can actually be stored on the USB key and MBDA can use that directly. Other than that, I'm not really sure what we can do. If we can ever find any other standalone synthesizers, well, I'm more than happy to write a synth driver for it.
All right, great. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller. How can we help?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Mike. It's Mike Calvo. I wasn't able to get through before. And
hey, Mike.
Sorry, man.
Hello.
Watching American Idol. So
oh.
just got finished and wanted to come in and just congratulate you, Mike, on a job well done. And on
thank
a great,
you very much.
On a huge undertaking, man, and you know that my development partner Matt Campbell is our lead programmer here is really really big into open source. So you've got our full support if you ever need any, if you just any kind of assistance. You're currently writing in Python, right?
I am, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you ever need anything or whatever, just kind of a any kind of assistance you might need or whatever, please feel free to contact us. But really, congratulations on a job well done, and the promotion you've done is unreal, man.
You thank
know,
you.
You've done a real good job on promotion. And again, just no questions really. Just I was wondering about the review cursor, which you answered. Thank you. And that's about it. But again, rock on, man. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, very much.
Yep.
Bye bye. 866-400-5333, 866-400. Jeff, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, can I just mention that I'm writing a free and open source screen reader. I think in no way am I trying to put any of the commercial screen readers out of action or anything like that. And I'm very thankful for Mike Calvo actually for ringing then. But I also see this as a sort of a partnership in a way because I think that. Because I have the capability of maybe implementing some experimental features or, you know, really going out on a limb to see what screen readers can do, I'm hoping that the commercial screen readers will take a look at maybe some of the things that I'm doing and, you know, perhaps think about implementing it in their own programs as well.
Sure, yeah. Okay, we have another caller. Let's bring the caller in and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller. How can we help?
Where can we send money to help further this along? Please spell the email address and website slowly.
Okay. So the person wants to know how they can donate to the project, Mike. And I don't know if you're prepared. I don't know if you're prepared for that or not, but we'll let you go ahead and handle that and see how you want to take that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. At this point in time, right now, I can't really receive donations. However, we're currently setting up an incorporated association called NV Access, and we're actually going to have the first meeting this Sunday, the 11th of March, and then we'll actually register as an association. And the plan is then to be able to accept donations to that association. And what the association really is there for is to pretty much just support NVDA, help out with, you know, the advertising or collecting of donations, etc. And it's just so that donations don't come directly to me. I don't feel that comfortable in,
sure,
in you know, doing that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
So once NV Access is up and running, you can have a look at the website, www.nvaccess.org. Currently just has a little blurb about what we're doing, but once we're all up and running, we will be able to accept donations, yes.
Okay, great. Daryl, do you have any questions or any comments at this point?
Oh, I'm not getting anything on the MSN side as far as questions, but I have one of my own.
Sure, Rick, go right ahead, and then we'll turn it over to Rick. Yeah. Go ahead.
Right, Mike. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you getting any help with the development of NVDA at this point? And please let the community know through Main Menu Live how we can help advance the screen reader.
Yeah, currently we have a small development team. I sort of started it by myself in April. However, my good friend Jamie Tay is also helping me quite a bit with the core development. We've worked on many projects together before, so it's great to have him on board. And we also now have, because NVDA has been translated into a few different languages now, Brazilian, Portuguese, Finnish, German, and I think there's a few on the way at the moment, maybe French. All those, there are some people who speak those languages or who are helping out at the moment and translating the files for us, which is good. And but if anyone really wants to help out with development, if you have skills in Python, in the Python language, or you've had skills in adaptive technologies, etc., well, you can definitely join the NVDA development list, and you can find out all about that email list at the NVDA website in our wiki. And other than that, for the general community, all I ask, I suppose, is that you just keep testing NVDA and telling me all the bugs you find or any new features that you want. Just when talking about new features, just remember, because it's only really me and Jamie and the others are really working on this completely voluntary, so we may not be able to implement certain features straight away. We do have to prioritize quite a bit, and of course the most important thing is fixing bugs. So but just give as much feedback as you can, that's all I say, and we can make this a pretty usable screen reader, I think.
I think one of the important things, too, to remember that, you know, this is an open source project, and with an open source project, people need to make sure that they understand that that's what it is, and that it is, you know, a 1.0 product, really, at this point. It's very, very new, and people need to understand that and set their expectations, you know, appropriately. It's not JAWS for Windows version 11, folks.
No.
it's not Windowized version 10. That's not what it is yet. And so keep that in mind when you're, giving people, giving them feedback and things like that. Rick, we're going to come to you in just a minute. We do have another caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, Jeff. Good evening.
Good evening, Randy.
I just wanted to call and add my two cents in saying that I think this is really terrific. And my question to you is sort of along the lines that Jeff just spoke about. As a free product, I mean, your obligation is to, in a sense, yourself, as well as what you might want to accomplish with the blind community. So how do you see your product kind of taking shape, say, a year out or 2 years from now, and how are you going to balance the wish list that we all have versus the things that you want to accomplish?
Great question, Randy. And we'll let you listen on the air if that's okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, okay. Look, I have a sort of an idea of where NVDA is going. You know, I want it to be as usable just in with Windows in generally. Also, it needs to work with other open source and free products as much as possible. So, for instance, even though the OpenOffice product isn't entirely accessible yet with Windows, as soon as that becomes accessible, which it is in the next month or year or so, however long they're going to take, but I am finding out about that. That will be one of my main priorities, is to make OpenOffice quite accessible with NVDA, as opposed to perhaps making Microsoft Office accessible. I understand a lot of people do use Microsoft Office, but this is a free and open source screen reader, and if I can support other free and open source products, I'll definitely do that. But my goal is at the moment is to make NVDA, try and make NVDA as stable as possible on lots of, you know, different systems by the end of this year. So I'm constantly working on just fixing bugs and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not really adding too many new features and things at the moment. I'm certainly listening to features, but we're mainly working on the bugs at the moment, so that, you know, we can safely say that anyone can run it and it's not going to crash or you know, eat their hard drive or something like that. I think it will happen, but you know what I mean. So we can just have that assurance.
Right. Okay, Rick, do you have any comments or anything like that about NVDA that you wanted to bring to the table tonight?
Sure. Just wanted to say thanks, Mike. It's a great program.
That's all right. Thank you.
It's very easy to use. I picked the program up and installed it, started using it, and, you know, I did my review of it only after an hour or two, you know, of using the product. So that's, to me, you know, is going to mean a lot of people are going to be able to pick it up, install it, and run it. And where I think this is really going to be good is all the people out there that just simply cannot afford one of the commercial screen readers.
Now, Rick, have you played with some of the other, you know, like Thunder and the other screen readers that are available out there now?
I've installed Thunder, and I've tried to use it a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
and I've not been real happy with it. I really don't want to say anything bad.
No, you know, no, I'm just wondering how it sort of compares. I mean, you know, there's
I
now Thunder and
now
there's...
and used it right away.
Really? Okay. Yeah,
Thunder, I've tried a couple of times now, and I've just been lacking as far as, you know, how certain things work with it.
Sure.
And I'd say NVDA definitely has a heads up on it right now.
Yeah. Now, we're going to have the Thunder guys on next month here on Main Menu Live, and they'll be able to talk to us all about Thunder. So that will be kind of interesting. The only reason I bring it up is because, you know, it's sort of a free screen reader that's currently, you know, floating around as well. So I thought, well, you know, I don't know if anyone's done these sort of comparisons or not. Daryl, have you?
That's my intention.
Yeah. Daryl, have you done anything with Thunder, you know, versus NVDA at all?
No, I have not. I have not installed and run Thunder yet. I will just say, going from the stated, you know, information available about Thunder, it currently works with a specialized version of an Internet Explorer browser called Webby, and so just in that regard right there, you've got to get a huge advantage with NVDA in that it works with Internet Explorer and especially
with
Firefox.
Yeah.
So
okay,
can I add something in Thunder's defense? Actually,
sure.
I've used Thunder quite a few times because, of course, when Thunder first came out, I was very excited about it, and I was pretty much ready to drop NVDA as well because I thought, well, you know, why don't we all work on the one project?
Right, that's where I was headed with it.
Well, yeah. where I've looked with Thunder, I think out of Thunder and NVDA, Thunder is way more stable, and it certainly is probably more trustworthy, especially for a new user to computers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might take a bit longer to learn, perhaps, but at least it's not going to crash or anything like that. Whereas NVDA, though, is much more experimental. I'm not really sure if Thunder is actually being currently updated. What I've seen, it seems to be staying pretty last July. So So if you want stability but a free screen reader, well, Thunder's great. Though, you know, I'm writing MBDA purely because it's open source. It gives people the chance to participate in the development. It's experimental, so we can really test those. You know, let's sort of move away from what screen readers are currently doing and let's try some different things, such as the object navigation that hasn't been really seen much in Windows at all.
No. Well, I don't want to focus a lot of time on this, but I just want to know because I'm sort of a programmer geeky kind of guy. So I want to know what exactly are you? I mean, I know it's written in Python, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly are you requiring? You know, for example, if someone wanted to download the source code and actually compile their own version of NVDA and start getting into the guts of it, what would they need to have? Just the Python interpreter and compiler?
Okay, what you'll need is you'll need Python 2.5. It will only work with 2.5 and above. You'll need a Python package called comtypes, which allows Python to sort of talk to the object models and stuff in Windows and MSAA and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need WXPython, which is WX is the architecture that we use to build the NVDA interface window and all that kind of stuff,
right.
All the GUI kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And PyHook, which is what we use to hook into the keyboard so we can actually watch what the keyboard's doing, and the Python Windows extensions, which is also some other stuff for common things like that. So there is quite a few things to install from source, but they're all definitely necessary. I will say at the moment we are, we're writing this in Python. But mainly, I'm continuing because a lot of people have been asking me, why am I writing it in Python? Why don't I write it in C++ or something like that? Well, I do admit in C++ or something, it would be certainly much faster, much more responsive. But then on the other hand, with, the time I've got and the skills I have, I think I'm getting a lot further writing it in Python. And eventually, once if we get some donations and a bit of money coming in and I can support myself a bit better, perhaps I will look into converting parts of it to C++ and then eventually the whole thing. But at this point in time, it's experimental. I think Python's a really good language for that.
Well, this also allows you to really have some sort of a scripting language for NVDA
mm-hmm.
as well, right? I mean, you can just basically use Python as your scripting platform.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite probably hard for people to start scripting for NVDA at the moment because I haven't actually written much documentation for it at all. I've been a bit naughty on that front.
it's always the last thing, Mike. Come on.
But, that's right. But I mean, the reason is also is because the structure, I think, over the last few months has been rapidly changing with NVDA. So, we have these ideas about app modules, which is support for specific applications, and then NVDA objects, which are sort of the logic for each different kind of control in Windows, but that's all sort of changing. At the moment, it's starting to stabilize quite a bit, so I will write some documentation on it soon, but you are right. With it all being in Python, you can script for certain applications or you can script for certain controls, etc., or you can even, try just delving into the whole thing and changing the logic of the whole caboose, really.
Yeah, great. Let's see. Now, we had a question from Mike Calvo. Mike Calvo is shooting me questions here as well as Matt Campbell. I'm alt-tabbing around trying to get to them. Hey, guys, I am the main menu address, if you can. That way Daryl can grab those for me, too. Now, Daryl and Rick, I wanted to ask you this, just from the user's perspective. How did you find... only because honestly, I haven't had a chance to play with NVDA too much. I've installed it and played with it very, very briefly, and I'm sorry about that, Mike, but I just haven't had an opportunity to do that. But Daryl and Rick, have you had a chance to do much, with the internet in reference to like forms mode and things like that? Does it have a forms mode or how does how does that work?
Go ahead, Rick, and then I'll chime in.
No, I haven't did too much on the internet with forms mode. I've played with it a little bit on internet sites, but haven't had a chance here either to get real deep into it.
Okay. Go ahead, Daryl.
Okay. And this comes into Pat's question, which I found here. First of all, I've used it a bit on the web. And there are some navigation keys such as H and Shift H to move forward and back through headings on a website. You can go to into and out of forms mode. When you're in forms mode, you're bypassing the virtual buffer essentially. The experimentation I've done on the web thus far, it's been impressive. I'm really excited about the possibilities to eventually support some of the dynamic HTML and AJAX type stuff. Pat wants to know, speaking of web navigation, does NVDA support some of the more advanced navigation that such similar to JAWS with navigation keys like D, N, and S, S being same link and N being non-linked text?
Okay. No, not at the moment. Not those type of things. We currently have H for heading, L for list, I for list item, K for link, because L was taken, and T for table.
Okay.
I probably will put in V for visitor link, and I'll do N for non-link when I have the time, so that'll be quite good. But we probably won't go too far from that. I really want to, you know, as I always say, I don't want to really make it really, really feature-rich. I want to make sure that the real fundamentals of it are there before we start doing that. But certainly V and N I'll think about adding, definitely so.
Absolutely.
I'll mention at the moment there's no links list or headings list. We are having some issues with bringing up dialog boxes, you know, while sort of doing sort of scripting type things in NVDA. But Jamie and I are currently working on it today, in fact.
Wow, great. Okay. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller.
Hey, guys. This is Matt Campbell.
Hey, Matt.
From Saratech.
Hello.
Actually, the question that Mike was asking was, why did you feel that there was a need for forms mode in IE and Firefox? Why not just kind of, you know, switch to, you know, automatically turn on virtual buffer bypass or virtual buffer bypass with a few exceptions?
Yeah, I was actually headed that way, Matt, but that's fine. So you want to go ahead and why don't you stay on here for a second, Matt, because I'd like to ask you a couple questions too.
Sure.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I think at the moment, because up until a while ago, JAWS was my personal screen reader of choice. That's what I sort of grew up with. I was sort of, I guess, basing it on that. I must admit, I have actually used System Access quite recently, and I've noticed how you have done that, and I'm sort of trying to get my head around exactly how that works. So it's a really interesting concept. I was just a bit confused with the idea if you have like navigation quick keys such as H, etc., to move to headings, if you are on an actual edit field, obviously that's going to type a H, and does it get a bit confusing for people to know when they can use the quick keys and when they can't?
Oh, it's actually pretty simple. Mm-hmm. When you're in an edit box, or for that matter, a list box, because this logic applies to edit boxes and list boxes. The quick keys are not available, and we figure that makes sense because when you go into one of those fields, the thing that you usually want to do is type or select an item. And if you want to use a quick key, then you just have to arrow out of the edit box or tab out of the list box, because in a list box, the arrow is automatically switched to selecting. So it was basically just a matter of having, for those fields, we just have a short list of keys that are exceptions that do work.
Okay. Yep.
Now, Matt, you had instant messaged me about, you know, using C++ versus using, you know, another higher level language. And you want to go ahead and address that here tonight?
Sure. You, Michael, you were talking about you know, when you got some more funding that you might start converting parts of it, the code, to C++ and eventually the whole thing. I would strongly encourage you to keep as much of it as possible in Python, or if not that, another high-level language such as Lua, and keep the amount of C or C++ code to a minimum.
It's cutting out a bit.
He's saying to keep, you know, your screen reader using as much Python or Lua as possible, versus converting it to C++. Now, Matt, have you found
that, you know, only, I'm only asking you this because, you know, you've obviously been in that environment with System Access for quite some time now, and Freedom Box and things. Have you found, I mean, obviously using a screen reader, it's going to be slower anyway, just because you're having to use the keyboard to navigate and things like that. So do you think that using a higher level language such as Python or Lua restricts you in performance in any way?
Not typically. If you find that certain functions are slower and you've measured the performance of your code and you find certain functions that turn out to be time critical that would be much faster in C++, then you can convert you can convert those piecemeal. But I mean, just convert as needed. But JavaScript code isn't necessarily less responsive than C++.
Interesting. Now, you know, I don't know how familiar you guys are with TextPal. This is Jamal Mazrui's free...
It's written in Ruby.
Yeah. Now, it has some performance, and this is why I kind of bring this up, because it has some performance issues. Now, admittedly, you're dealing with a text editor, and that's probably a heck of a lot more complicated with especially really large documents in reference to memory and things. Do you think that's really why that is the case, Matt? That we're, you know, that you see a little bit of performance degradation in something like a text editor versus, you know, a screen reader, which probably you're not dealing with as much memory resources. You know, as far as
I've only had a passing look at TextPal, and I happen to know that TextPal uses the WX Widgets GUI toolkit as NVDA does, and underneath. WX Widgets uses the rich edit control. So you probably have most of, at least I would think, that you have the rich edit control doing the lion's share of the work on the document itself anyway. But as I said, I've only had a passing look at TextPal, so I don't know.
It's just kind of interesting. I just thought I'd throw it out there and just see what you thought. But okay. Did you have anything else for us tonight, Matt?
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Go ahead, Rick.
It's Daryl. I just wanted to say that, you know, comparing these higher-level languages versus lower-level languages, from the user perspective, at least using NVDA today, and this is not even with Eloquence, but with, you know, like these RealSpeak and NeoSpeech voices, which are already a little less responsive, I find it quite responsive. Really, I can't perceive it being any slower than JAWS per se.
Interesting, isn't it? Interesting.
Mm. Mm.
Maybe even a bit faster, actually.
Yeah.
Now, I must say, the one thing, Michael, the one thing that you need to do soon is put together an installer.
Yes, we're currently working on an NSI installer. Victor Seren is working on that at the moment, so yeah, we are definitely thinking about that. It's just originally I didn't focus on that because it was more that.
Yeah, more
people
of a
would
personal
probably just,
project and yeah, throw it out there.
Yeah, it was more of a personal project, and also that I more just was thinking about, you know, having it at university or whatever, running off a USB key and things. I wasn't really imagining people installing it in the first place, but I can see now, though, as more and more people are wanting to use it.
Well, you've advertised it enough that it's definitely out there and people are talking.
Yeah.
So you and Matt need to get together and talk all things Python and screen reader developer stuff.
I'll have to be rather guarded with my side of the conversation.
Yeah, of course.
Because where I work.
Sure, yeah. Of course. Are you going to CSUN, Matt?
No.
Okay.
No, I may be brought in remotely for some Serotech presentations, but I will not be there.
Well, I know that Mike is, and I will be there as well. And so the three of us will have to get together and have dinner and chat. So, absolutely. Okay, Matt, anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, have a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon, huh?
Okay.
Okay, great.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
866, I think we have time for one more caller. 866-400-5333. 866-400-5333. And before we let you go, Mike, and I know you've kind of given us sort of your, you know, where your direction is, but where do you see, and I know you're going to be working
on bug fixes and things like that. Where do you see yourself in reference to working on some of these issues which are not currently being addressed by the current screen reader developer community, such as Ajax or dynamic HTML type content? Is this something that you think you'll be able to address in Firefox and in IE?
Yeah, look, currently in Firefox, NVDA already has support for dynamic HTML, at least when the page is, you know, the content is partly updated. NVDA certainly keeps track of exactly what's happening there, and that seems to work quite well in Firefox 2 and 3. I must admit that I'm having more... I'm able to work with Firefox a lot easier than with Internet Explorer, more so because Firefox is both free and open source itself.
Sure.
I'm able to work on with the developers of Firefox, Aaron Lementhal, who works on Mozilla Accessibility and did the accessibility for Firefox. He's very helpful, and I'm also on the iAccessible 2 committee, which iAccessible 2 is a new standard, you know, that came out
from IBM, right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, I'm heavily into that as well, and that's really going to help things such as Ajax and live regions and all that kind of stuff on the web, especially when Firefox gets iAccessible 2 into its program. I'm not sure how far I can go with Internet Explorer. I'll certainly try, but as I said, I'm always focusing on the, you know, Firefox and all that kind of stuff more.
Well, we have a caller, yeah. But the only thing I wanted to say to that is I think a lot of the reason why the screen reader developers are not doing things with IE right now, and again, this is just my opinion, so please accept that for what that is.
Yeah.
And I could be totally wrong, and I'd be happy to admit it. But I think a lot of the reason behind that is that currently there's not a lot of information that's being presented in Internet Explorer's object model on the events that are happening. For example, if you if content is changing in the middle of the screen, how do you really present that to the user? I mean, how does that? I mean, to a sighted person, they can just see it on the screen. But how do you do that for a screen reader? So I think these are some of the really difficult things that need to be answered before we kind of dive into how, you know, how do we actually tackle it. All right, let's bring our caller in, and we're almost out of time. So let's try to bring this caller in and see what they have to say. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, this is Renee Salix, and my husband, Tom Jones, and I are also going to be at the CSUN conference and look forward to seeing you. I tried to do an instant message to you, but you are shown as offline, so maybe I don't have the right address. But anyway, I'm trying to get to the website of the NVDA. If you could just give that out real slowly.
Okay, we'll do that. Did you have any other questions?
No, only the links list. I didn't recall ever hearing...
It doesn't have that currently.
It doesn't have that currently. Okay,
no.
So when you are tabbing around the web page, it's just tabbing, and then you'll get to the links. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, well, that's great timing because we're almost out of time, and we'll have Mike give the closing information. If you can just listen on the air, that would be great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, okay. Well, the website address for NVDA is www.nvaccess.org/NVDA.
Okay, and do you want to give an email address where people might be able to reach you?
Yes, my email address is mick@Kulgan, which is KULGAN.net.
All right. Well, Mike and Rick, I really want to sincerely thank you for joining us tonight. And Rick, we're going to have you back and talk all about the Blind Geek Zone.
We'll definitely have
to do that and find out what you're up to and, you know, make sure people are well aware of what you're up to. Daryl, thank you very, very much for all your help tonight as well.
Yes,
and do you have any closing comments for us? We've got about a minute here.
Just recommend everybody who is especially into experimenting and trying out something new to go on over to nvaccess.org and try out NVDA. It's impressive and getting better.
Absolutely. Next week on Main Menu Live, we're going to be having on Larry Skutkan from the American Printing House for the Blind, and he's going to be talking all about new things coming out of APH. And the most exciting thing I think people are wanting to hear about is, got a guess there, Rick?
Bookport 2.
That's right, Bookport 2. He'll be telling us all about it. I think this will be the first time that people will hear what the new features of the Bookport 2 will be. So I'm extremely excited to find out what's going to be happening in that venue. So, and remember that the time zone is changing. So Main Menu Live is actually going to begin in the first hour. And so keep that in mind next week during the first hour. So it's going to start at 9 Eastern to 11 Eastern or 6 to 8 Pacific, 1 to 3 Universal on Wednesdays. Good night, everybody. And we'll see you next week on Main Menu Live.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.